Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. This is a recorded interview with Mr. Henry Marks of 39 Sergeant Court, Sergeant Row, Swampscott. Mr. Marks, can you go back a bit to your early childhood and tell me a little bit about where you grew up, your family, a little bit?
I grew up in Poland, in the city of Lodz.
L-O-D-Z.
L-O-D-Z, yes. And the Germans called it Litzmannstadt. Lodz was quite a large city, I would say, approximately the size of Boston. And it had a large Jewish community, a lot of industries. And I grew up in that city. I had my parents, of course I lived with my parents, and I had, we were 6 brothers and 2 sisters. And until the war broke out, we lived in that city. My father was a very pious person. We all were pious people. And I think that's why I belong to an Orthodox shul today, because of my background. And when the war broke out...
Excuse me, let's go back. How about your mother?
Oh, yes. She was... My mother was a woman, of course, also pious. And they came from very pious people. In fact, one of her brothers was a rabbi in the old country. And we come from Orthodox people. My mother was, of course, a housewife, as all women in Poland were. And my father was a merchant. We had a restaurant in Lodz. And in fact, it was quite known to the Orthodox Jews in Poland, and they used to come to our restaurant.
It was kosher, obviously.
Absolutely.
There was double kosher.
There was no question about that.
Yeah.
And as I said, we all were brought up in a religious way, and we all grew up in Lodz.
What kind of school did you go to?
Well,
what's your earliest school recollection?
Well, I do recall very little. When it comes to schooling, really, because a public school, of course, we all went to public school, mm-hmm. And to go to a higher school, it wasn't easy for Jews in those days.
What age did you start public school?
We started public school, if I can recall, I think at age 7, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we worked, we went to school and we finished high school. And after that...
Excuse me, did you, yeah. Let's go back a minute. Mm-hmm. Were the students predominantly Yiddish?
Christians, no, Christians.
No, Christians.
Christians, yes, yes.
So there was a neighborhood school?
Oh yes. Well, you went to neighborhood schools. Of course, after school you went to cheder.
Yes.
That was another thing.
All right, let's go back to school. I mean, was there any evident anti-Semitism? Was there?
Always.
Always.
Friendly
relations?
No. Jews never had any friendly relations with the Christian people, with Poles. You have to remember that Poles are Catholics,
Yes.
And although they were Catholics, and you it might come to mind that what's the difference? You know, a Christian person is not so terrible in here, and we live with the Christian people. But in Poland especially, the Poles were brought up to hate Jews. The children were taught that Passover was a time when the Jews would kill a person, a Christian, to get the blood from them and use it for Passover. Mm-hmm. So that's how much education these people had about Jews. And as I say, the kids were brought up to dislike and to hate the Jews. The parents, let's say a parent in Poland, a Christian parent would say to his child, if you're not going to behave, I'm gonna send you out, and a Jew is gonna catch you. So this is the mentality of the Christian people in Poland.
So your years in school were typical of what others had. In other words, there was a some relationship, but there was an undercurrent of
definitely. We have nothing to do with the Polish population.
In school was just
a matter of going to school and for studies and nothing else. Yes. And that was the end.
No play together.
No play together or anything of that sort. Okay. So it was in fact, we used to have pogroms at night from the Polaks and the Jews, and we had. I can recall I belonged to a Beitar, which is after today what Begin at one time was. My brothers belonged to the Revizionist, they used to call them.
Revizionist.
Right. Also was part of Jabotinsky's people. And those people were the ones that used to fight with the Christians,
in other words, defend Jewish community.
That's right. Those were the ones that really defended the Jewish community. In Lodz, for instance, all the Balagolas, most of them used to belong to the Revizionism. And those are the ones that were the strong, hardy people that when they went out to get revenge, they knew how to do it, you see. So there was always that kind of a feeling between Christian and Jew.
Did you have any special experience that you can recall that involved the clash between Jewish students and non-Jewish students?
No, not really. The only clashes that we used to have, of course, we used to get into fights, is because they used to call us names in school, you know, Żydzie Parszywy, you know, and you just wouldn't go for it. So, you know, we all used to have fights and clashes after classroom or in the streets or something like that.
So after school, daily, not including Saturday, you went to the
shul.
Sure.
To the shtibl.
Shtibl.
Yes.
We call it Hebrew school here, but over there.
Well, Hebrew school, that's a different story. Yeah. Go to shul and shtibl, that was for davening only.
Religious.
For religious, right. For
education.
Purposes. But after school, we used to go to Acheda.
Acheda, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So
that is a separate thing. During the week, we used to go to Acheda. Yeah. And of course, Shabbos, we used to go with the father. We used to go to shtibl.
Holy day.
Yes.
Mother prepared.
Oh yes. No question. No, we used to bake the challahs at home and cook for whatever.
Did you ever receive any strangers to your house on Friday night?
Oh yes. Oh yes. An oirech, to bring an oirech home was a mitzvah.
Yeah.
You see, and you were looking forward to it, to get to bring an earth. So this is was a daily, procedure that you would never turn away a person that was.
What number brother were you? Or?
I was the youngest.
You were the youngest.
I was the youngest. Yes.
So that's.
Then I had, as I said, we were six brothers and two sisters.
And how was the oldest? How old was your oldest?
My oldest, I would say must have been, I'm trying to come back.
Yeah.
I would say my oldest must have been about, at the time, in 1939, he must have been about 30 years old, I would say, or roughly maybe 32, something like that, yeah.
Let's go back still a little to school. How would you evaluate the education that you got, in the Polish school? How would you evaluate that? Did that add to your knowledge of that? Did you learn something there?
Yes, I would say that as far as schools are concerned, we have greater respect for teachers and educators than you have it in this country. As far as education is concerned, yes, we had good education for people who really wanted to learn.
You had arithmetic, you had history,
geography. We were not ignorant when it came to geography, about the world. We knew where this country is or that country is. We were taught German, as a foreign language. Oh yes, because we were not too far from the German border. You see, of course, Poland was a small country anyway. Lodz was more or less had more education, or more closer.
It was a cosmopolitan city.
Yeah, cosmopolitan, yeah. And it was closer to German learning than anything else, than the Russian.
So in other words, you really had three languages:
Polish,
German in school, and Yiddish at home.
That's right.
It sounds a little bit of Hebrew, probably.
Right.
Almost full language.
That's right. Right.
So so now you're about 13 or 14 years old. You're after Bar Mitzvah, and where are you in school at that point?
Well, I'm in. Of course, at that time, my father died, and we all had to. My father died early in life. He was about, 54. And we all had to get involved into studying and also into working. So everybody was trying to do something. Of course, most of us have had to stop schooling and get into work.
Did you retain the family business?
No. Prior to that, that was in the 30s, and I think that was a bad times, if you know in this country how it was. The Depression time, and we were broke.
Sure.
But my brothers had started a business at home and making in the sweater business, that kind of thing. And we had machinery at home and so forth and so on. So we produced different things from the house. I went to work for a company who also, I was a youngster, also that has to do with that kind of work. So we mostly worked at home and we produced, sweaters and tricol, used to call it at home.
I see.
I don't know what you call it here. you know, we produce things that are woven, wool, and cotton mixed with wool and so on and so on. So that's what we got into, and that's what we
did. It was a family business again.
It was a family business, right.
But the, the head was, the father was there.
Right.
And you all worked together.
And that's what we tried to, how we supported ourselves.
All right. So then you worked, but you worked for another company.
Yeah.
As an apprentice, was it?
Temporarily, as an apprentice.
Did they have that system of apprenticeship?
That kind of a system,
yeah.
Same
like
in Austria? Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You had an apprenticeship in Poland, sure.
Yeah.
You went to work and you learned, and then you got paid if you knew something.
Yeah. So you went to work for somebody else.
Right.
All right, so, all right, during that period you were working. So what did you do with your spare time? Did you belong to any Jewish organizations?
We belonged,
sports clubs?
No, we belonged to, as I said, to the Beitar.
Beitar, what
was
that?
Beitar is the youth organization of Jabotinsky.
Oh, was a Jewish youth organization.
Right, of Jabotinsky.
And you spoke Yiddish? Or
we spoke Yiddish. No, we spoke Yiddish.
I see.
And Polish. Polish.
The, what was it, social or political
athletic? It's actually the same thing what Begin is today.
Yeah.
He belonged to, at one time, to the same organization.
Yeah.
The older people, the older ones, like my brothers, they belonged to the Revizionisten.
They were
who are also from Beitar, you become a Revizionist, you see? You become a little older. It's like a graduate thing. Then you go to Akshara, and from Akshara you go to Israel, to Palestine at the time.
Okay, so in other words, the pioneering, everyone wanted to go to Israel eventually.
Right, right. We were all Zionists.
Zionists.
Sure.
I see. All right, so you had schooling up to about what, 14, 15
years old,
and then you became, you went into the workforce.
Right.
And you and you worked as an apprentice, and when you got through with your apprenticeship, did you stay with the same company?
No, we, as I said, we worked at home.
Oh, you worked at home.
Yeah, we continued to do the business at home, and until the war.
Until the war.
Until the war, until 1939.
Mm-hmm. Was it a substantial business? Did you have other workers
working? No, no, it was, as I said, we were quite a few brothers,
yes,
and staying at the time, and we so we worked at home, and in fact my sister helped, and my mother helped, you know, so it was something that we have done at home.
And you sold your product to who?
To stores and so forth, and local stores mostly.
And yet one of the brothers was a salesman out?
Yeah, yeah. He went out
getting
and, business, that's right, and orders and whatnot. Yeah.
Okay, so eventually the brothers met their girls, and they
one
off of their own, did
right.
they?
They were, I had, let's see, one, two, three brothers who were married at the time when the war broke out. And the rest of them, of course, were not.
But nevertheless, even the married ones worked in the business.
Worked, yeah. No, the married ones were on their own.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them, let's say, one worked in lodge, married into a family who had a quite a substantial business. And a very known family in lodge, Jewish family. And so he was part of their business.
Yeah.
The second one married a, she was a teacher in a public school, not in a lodge, but in another town. And he was a salesman. So they were on their own, as you see. And the third one, the oldest one, had also in another town, also had a large grocery store, you see, a grocery business, and they were well off too at the time, in a small town, and so they were on their own, you see, and the rest of them, of course, the rest of us were at home.
Let's see if we're getting it just for the hell of it.
all the catches.
You did a good job, so.
Your voice comes through very well, indeed. Mr. Marx will continue. Mr. Marx, your adolescent period, what kind of social life did you have? Imagine, did you go to dances? Did you have parties?
Yes, we were, you know, we had friends, Jewish boys. We went in the evening, we went dancing, yes. We had a good time, yeah. But it was a short life. Simply because when the war started, we were young. And so as you can see, we didn't have a chance to enjoy our life as we grew up. Because when the war started in 1939, at the time I think I was 17, or 16, so there wasn't much really time to enjoy life.
Okay. Well, and you continued living an Orthodox Jewish family.
Yeah.
And continued, your lifestyle
right.
was Orthodox.
Sure.
Although you had a very modern education. Well, Mr. Marx, let's see if you can remember a little bit about the politics at that period, the agitation prior to the war. Of course, there was a lot of agitation, and Germany was pressing Poland for concessions and so forth. Can you remember any of that period?
Prior,
especially as it affected Jewish people.
Prior, well, to be honest with you,
you were only about 15. Let's say,
yes,
15 and 17.
Prior, the time. Very much prior to the war, not really, except let's say starting in 1936, 37, of course we used to hear about Hitler and about Germany. What we read wasn't very good, it wasn't very pleasant. The Polish people, in fact, I think, picked up their anti-Semitism at the time because of it. They were absolute against Jews, and if anything, they certainly would have wanted to see the extermination of Jews, and they were happy with the upcoming Germany and the Hitler era at the time. So that's as far as I know. But of course, we read when the Germans came into Czechoslovakia, when they took over Czechoslovakia and Austria, and we read in the papers of what's going on, we just couldn't believe it. We just couldn't believe it. We just couldn't believe it that people can be that cruel, that something like this goes on.
Never happened to you.
And it would never happen to us. Yeah. Never happened to us.
Nobody thought of running.
No, because you see, my mother always used to tell us about when she used to live under Germany, that the Germans were the most wonderful people to be with. Yeah. They've done business with the German people, and they were nice to the Jews, and we never had any problem as far as the German people are concerned. So this was something absolutely new. That's why the Jewish population couldn't believe it, of what happening in Austria and in Yugoslavia when they took part of it.
What about the Poland? There must have been Polish Nazis who were sympathetic.
Oh, there's no question. That's why I say
they bothered the Jews.
Oh,
with
yes,
physical
more, oh,
attacks on Jews.
There was the closer
As I say, in the late 80s, it was just at times unbearable. But we took that as part of anti-Semitism, which always was in Poland.
That you could live with that.
That we had to live with it, we had to fight back.
Yeah.
We had to fight back a little bit and continue living. But we took it as part of anti-Semitism. It was because it was always there. The Poles were always anti-Jews. They were brought up anti-Jews. They were brought up to hate the Jews. They were brought up to make the Jews, in the eyes of the child and the grown-up population, that this is the worst thing that can happen to you, is be with a Jew. And so we were used to it, you see, and we thought that this is part of it.
But in spite of the stories that you heard about what was going on in Germany and Austria when the Nazis came, you still felt that somehow or other you would escape all that.
Right, that we thought that it is not as bad as the papers were saying, and that we could live with them as a new government or whatever. We didn't realize that Germany wants to take over all of Europe. We thought that there'll be a new government and that we can live with it. As I said, as my mother always said, gee, we knew the Germans before and we lived with them very well in the before Poland took over our part of the country. And we were under German. Of course, that was before my time. But we did very well as far as the Germans are concerned. They were friendly.
Where were the Russians in Poland as far as you're concerned, as far as where you live?
As far as I'm concerned, where I live, the Russians were far, far away. I had absolutely no knowledge as far as the Russians are concerned.
They didn't take that part of Poland?
No, not at all. They took the eastern part, and we were on the western part, closer to the German border, you see.
In other words, you didn't hear any special stories about the occupation of Russia,
no.
Poland, except that they wanted to put in a communist government.
As far as occupation of Russia, there was no occupation of Russia then.
No, I mean, the Russian occupied part of eastern Poland.
Eastern Poland?
Yeah.
Not at that time. Wasn't. That wasn't. We knew nothing.
It was after the Hitler Pact that they.
Right.
But they never came to Europe.
But that was already in, let's see, in 1941.
Yeah. When you talk about the war breaking out, the war between who? Who in Poland and Germany?
And Germany, yes.
Poland and Germany.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yes. Well, when was the first time that you had an inkling of an attack?
Not really. We didn't know until it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was on September 1st, if I'm not mistaken,
right,
that Germany crossed over the borders and they went right through it. So
were you near the border?
Lodz? No, it wasn't quite that close, but we were inland. We were about not too far from. We were southwest from Warsaw, so. Mm-hmm. We knew nothing until really they hit us. But no, we did have an inclination that they are getting ready to get into Poland. We knew, because in 1939, in the beginning, I remember we had Jews escaping from eastern Germany into western Poland.
Yeah.
You see. So we knew that there is something going on, but we didn't realize it's going to be that bad.
Well, how long soon after they first attacked did they come to your city?
A few days.
Just a few days.
That's all.
Do you remember that day when they entered the city?
Yes, I do remember.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Describe it a little
bit. If I'm not mistaken, it was on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we were out in the streets. And we didn't dare be too close on the sidewalk where the streets are. And I remember that hundreds and hundreds of people, Poles, were lining up on the streets and the sidewalks. And I saw the German army coming through, and they were crying, Heil Hitler, Heil Hitler.
The Poles?
Yes.
Okay.
And this is something, something I remember.
Was there a Polish army in the city, or were you ever near the Polish?
Well, the Polish army was there, but the Polish army didn't mean really much to anything. They were not equipped even to withstand anything, you know, of the power that Germany had. So it was just a show army rather than an army that could fight. They didn't have anything of the sort that they could withstand the German.
You were fighting with horse and buggy.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So
the Germans were fighting with tanks.
It was absolutely ridiculous. It was nothing.
All right, so that night you watched the parade coming in, you went
and
home.
And that was the end. And that knew it was a. It was. How can I say? It was a horror. It was a horror to see.
Anything
you
happened
could
that
see
night?
At the time.
Yeah.
You could feel what's coming.
Yeah.
You could feel that moment what's coming.
Something was coming.
Yes. You could feel the horror that was coming because of the population, how they have welcomed the German army. We knew it's going to be something terrible.
So in your family, all right, what happened that night? How many were at home in that night?
I really can't recall that vividly, but I remember we went home, the friends of ours, we were his friends. We went home and we just stayed home. We were just scared. We were just terribly scared.
Yeah.
And from then on, the following day, days, it was just something that you live with a terror every day and every minute. Because if you walked the streets, if you went out, you could see a German soldier and a Pole. The German soldier, the funniest thing, the German soldier didn't know the difference from a Polak or a Jew. But it was the Polak who pointed out who is a Jew and who is not. Then they took us out of the city. The Poles.
When was the first order that came out?
It was right about 2 or 3 days afterwards.
Days.
Yeah.
And they ordered all the Jews together.
They grabbed the Jews from the streets. And they took them outside the city. And we had trenches at the time outside the city. There were trenches, and the Jews had to. Get those trenches filled back with the soil, with the ground, to make the ground even. And then every day it was a little bit more and more. Then you could see they had a big place where they used to have a marketplace. They put up a in a place they put up, what do they call it, to hang people.
Scaffold.
And they hung Jews.
And non-Jews too, or just Jews?
No, just Jews.
What did they accuse them of?
One was accused for stealing something. You didn't have to have any.
Were there any political hangings for them?
Some of them were. We call communists and whatnot, you know. It was just an excuse. There was no such a thing as a court or anything like that.
How about Zionists? Did they,
No. We didn't have, in those days, there was no such a thing as Zionists.
Well, the clubs that Jewish people
yeah,
had,
but that was that was scheme. Yeah, but that was for Palestine.
Germans didn't know anything about that.
No, no, that wasn't that wasn't at the time. That wasn't the this kind of political club wasn't to hurt the Poles, you know.
Yeah.
So, but of course, the Poles all these those years used to holler to the Jew. Zizia, go to Palestine, you know, now it's Jew, go to Palestine, and so forth and so on. They wanted to get rid of the Jews, there's no question about it.
To your knowledge, were there any organization of Jewish defense, Jewish underground?
At the time, no. Against the, against the Germans?
Germans?
No, no. There was none because, as I said, it was all new. We knew nothing of what's going to happen. And we had no reason. We wanted to see what's gonna transpire when they come in.
What
because
kind
really
of
Yeah.
What kind of political attitude did the Jews have at that time? Were they socialists, Democrats, Republicans, or were they socialists? Were they really communists?
Most, I would say, a lot of Jews. I don't know the majority or not, because as I say, I was. Not old enough to get involved in these things of knowing the majority or minority were involved in. But quite a few Jews belonged to, what do they call it?
The Bund.
The Bund.
Right.
Okay. And it was leaning towards socialism.
Yeah, they were social democrats.
Social democrats. Oh, well, not even more. I would say more than social democrats.
Yeah.
More to the left.
Yeah,
yeah more to the left. So most of them, I would say a lot of. I would say the majority of Jews.
Politically, oh,
politically
to the Bund.
Bund, yeah. And
that's a Jewish political organization.
And I would say the reason, I would say most of the reason was is because we were so despised by the Poles, you see. Mm. They were so anti-Semitic that the Jews were looking for something to offset that, you see. I would think it's, you know, it reminded me during the war, or right after, when the United States and Russia became such good friends, they fought the same enemy, that the Jews thought that becoming a left-winger or a believer in Russia was nothing wrong. And mainly, they didn't do it because they wanted to hurt the United States, but because they felt that Russia was the one that helped the few Jews to you know, do that survive in Eastern Europe.
It took them out of Poland.
It took them out
of
Poland.
It gave them an opportunity
to survive.
To run away.
Right.
I see. Okay, so 2 or 3 days went by, and then you started to feel the pressure, the enmity, and so forth. What happened to your family? I mean, to Jewish families, as I understand, they would take hundreds of Jews on labor.
As I said,
the details, and then they'd come home at night.
Right, at night, exactly.
And then in the morning. So who paid them? Were they paid? Or were they
Food
given
there was
for
no such
that?
A thing. Oh,
no.
There was no such a thing. My God. There's no such a thing. They were taken in the morning, and they went to work, whether. Whatever they had to do, and at night they came back, and that was it. And the morning was the next morning was the same thing. They came into to the Jewish homes, and they took out the able people, and there we went. There wasn't such a thing as pay. There wasn't such a thing as food. You know, one day's work. You come home, you eat. If you have, that's all.
What did people work at? What did they make a living at?
Well,
happened to the business?
That was it. The business was closed.
Closed.
You couldn't continue doing business. After that, I really don't know much about the situation in Lodz, because for some reason or other, I don't remember. It must have been a childish game, as far as I'm concerned, you know, because friends and I have decided to leave the city. Why I did that, I don't remember. I really don't know why. And we left, and we went towards the border.
They're all boys or just boys
and
girls?
No, no, just the boys. Okay. We went towards the border.
How many of you were?
We were, let's see, one, two, three, four.
Four of you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The four of us
did
went.
Did you tell your mother that you were leaving?
Yes.
Or your brothers?
I told my brother, I went to my brother, I remember, and he did not agree with me. And he said, I'm not going to even say goodbye to you because you shouldn't be going anyplace. But for some reason or other, I left.
How about your mother? Do you remember?
My mother, I don't remember what happened. I just said to my mother that I'm leaving, I'm going away. And she didn't, I don't think she said anything much really.
Was that the last time you saw her?
That was the last time I saw her.
All right, so you went with three friends.
Yeah.
And you went where?
Towards Bialystok. Uh-huh. And it was towards the Russian border. At the time, as you said before, when the Germans came in, the Russians also came in on the other side.
Yeah.
And they took up, they took part of Poland from the eastern side. Mm-hmm. And they went as far as Brest-Litovsk, if I can recall, and Bialystok, and so forth. So we went towards towards Bialystok.
Mm-hmm. And then you got there.
We got there and we became refugees.
And you were Russian occupied.
We were, before the Russians let us in, we were what they had, a no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the fields for several days. So we couldn't go back and forth. We couldn't go back to the German part, and we couldn't go in into the Russian part because they wouldn't let us in.
When you say we, it must have been the four of you plus thousands of others.
Oh, hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands were laying there in that no man's land, and we couldn't go anyplace. The Germans, of course, were shooting at us, and the Russians wouldn't let us in. So we were in a dilemma. But eventually, after about a week, I think, we were able to go into Bialystok. And the first thing we did is go into a synagogue. We found a synagogue, and we found hundreds and hundreds of people in the synagogue.
Already there?
Yes. They were laying on the floor, sleeping on the floor. It was just a mess.
All families?
Yes.
So who fed you at that time?
Well, we wherever we could find a piece of bread, it was good enough. That's it.
Yeah.
From there, I don't know how long we stayed there. We couldn't have stayed too long. We continued to go south by train. Of course, we didn't go by train, but I don't know what you call the path where the two trains, the train where they connect.
They connect, yeah.
You know,
that's right.
The two paths.
Uh-huh.
In other words, there's an opening there. And we try to get on those trains and stay between these two paths and hitch a ride so that no one would see us, of course. And we went as far as Tarnopol.
Mm-hmm.
That was east of Lvov. That was the part where the Russians have occupied. And we wound up in a small town in Zbaraj, I remember. And we stayed there with a family, with a Jewish family, that took us in, and
what did you carry? Just the clothes on your back?
Nothing else. We didn't have anything.
You didn't take anything with you?
We didn't have anything. There was no room for you to get around with something in your hands.
Yeah, I see.
You see?
Yeah. Well, you stayed with this Jewish family.
They were in this family, I remember. The son was quite involved in the local government,
mm-hmm.
especially after the Russians came in. and he asked me to study Russian, the Russian language, which I did. See? And although I am very easy on languages, I can pick up a language quite easily. So I got involved in learning Russian. And I started to work in the Russian office. In other words, in the local office.
Yeah.
Local in Polish, actually.
Yeah.
It's a Polish office.
Yeah.
Because it was still Poland there, although the Russians took it over. But I also, as I said, I studied Russian there. And we were there until the war started in 1941.
Which your friends were there too?
Yes.
All four of you?
Yes.
Stayed at the same time?
Yes.
Yes. You stayed with this family?
Well, I stayed with the family, yeah. The other one stayed with somebody else, so we were all in the same town.
Did you get paid for your work?
Oh yes, we got paid for the rubles, of course, and we...
2, 3, 4, testing 1, 2, 3, 4. We continue with the story of Mr. Henry Mark. We're now in a small town occupied by the Russians in Poland, and we continue from here.
And I lived there until the war started in 1941. In 1941, when the war started between the Germans and Russia, we started to flee again, and so did the local Jews. Of course, being single and alone, by the way, going back a little bit, from the time that I was there, when I was living there, I did try to be in touch with my family in Lodz, but I had no luck. I did send also packages, by the way, and I never knew whether or not they have ever received those. So this was something that it was a mystery to me yet to know.
Did you finally know what happened to your family?
I'll get that one.
You get to that?
Yeah, I'll get to that.
All right.
When the war started, as I say, everybody was fleeing the part of the country into Russia. But that was the only way that you could go.
Was there an organized effort by the Russians to help people flee, and did they provide transportation?
No. You have to remember that the Russians were not a up-to-date people like the American as far as transportation is concerned. And they had to use every vehicle and every horse that the army could get a hold of for their own use. So therefore, there was not much left for the population itself. The population had to do the best they could on their own.
The Jews, I mean, you're talking about Jews now.
Even the Christians, whoever wanted to get into deeper Russia, there's nothing else they could do. You see, then be on their own and go if they want to go, or stay with the Germans.
But nobody stopped them from going. The Russians didn't.
No, the Russians didn't prevent us from going into, because you see, the Russians used several tricks during the time when I lived in what we call Zapadna Ukraina. You see, the occupied eastern Poland. At one time, I remember. That the at the time they were called the NKVD, and now they call it the KGB.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. So at one I remember one time the people that I knew that I stayed with, he knew some people in the NKVD at the time, and he told me, he said, remember, they're going to come to you and ask you whether or not you would like to go back home. That means to Poland.
To Lodz.
To Lodz. Make sure you say no, because something is going to happen to those people who are trying to do that. So, sure enough, I remember one night, the Russians, the KGB, came to those people in the middle of the night. They took them out, and no one knows whatever happened to those people. So they used their tricks, you know, at the time.
Did they ever ask you whether you want to go back?
Oh yes, they did.
Yeah. You said no.
Of course not. You know. So.
When did you decide to go, to flee again?
Well, when the war started, when the Russians started to retreat. And we had to go along, and that was it. We had no other place to go at the time. So we went east, and I wound up in Kiev. Mm-hmm. When we came outside of Kiev, there was a proclamation at the time to go to certain points and enlist in the army. Okay.
In the Russian army or
the
Polish
army?
Army.
Oh no, the Russian army. There was no Polish army.
Kiev was,
yeah.
With Russian.
Yeah. So we went there, and they took us, and they took us into the army. They sent me to south to what do you call it? Tbilisi.
Tbilisi.
I think the we'll call it Tiflis.
Tiflis.
Yeah, this is in the southern part of Russia, close to the Iranian border. Well, I wouldn't call it close, but it was around that way, and where, you know, where Stalin grew up and where he was born.
The mild weather there.
Very mild weather. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very mild weather. A lot of wine growing there and so forth, grapes. So I went there, they took me there, and I was in school for...
Military school.
They took me to military school because, I don't know, with my education and my year in music. So they took me to a school of radio and shortwave radios. I was there for I don't know how many months. Then came a proclamation that all those who came from occupied lands should be taken into a special place for work only. In other words, we were not pressed it to be in the army. Mm-hmm. So they took us to Astrakhan. And we worked in different places. Of course, it was hard work.
With labor.
Yeah, it was labor camps, actually. Yeah. You know? And we were in different types of labor camps. And then I wound up in Astrakhan on a fish, as I bought, how do they call it? A fish processing plant. Mm-hmm. Okay? And while I was working there, I got acquainted with a Jewish family. Was I remember a son and an older, he was an older person and an old mother. And I was trying to help him. It was after, I don't know how long I was there, I don't remember. But one time, this is just an incident I'm trying to bring out. Yeah. I was trying to help, and these people, and I brought home one fish. I was hiding one fish and trying to bring it home, and I got caught. They took me to court, and I was given, I don't remember, probably, I know it must have been about 3 years in jail. Mm-hmm. But I was there a short time in jail. I remember they let me out because I developed malaria at the time. Mm-hmm. Because of the hot weathers that they had at that time, that part of the country. And from there, when they let me out...
Were you in army uniform? Were
no,
you
that no, this was labor, no, no, it was labor camps. No,
what did you work on? What did you build on? Did you build anything?
Well, we worked on railroads.
Did they pay you anything?
Oh, no, not really. Just for food.
Just for food.
They gave us food.
And shelter you got
shelter.
Where?
From the labor camps.
Labor camp.
Yeah.
And barracks? Camp. And
barracks, yeah.
Were they out there?
Plenty of lice. Yeah.
Plenty of lice. Were they guarded, military, these camps?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, mm-hmm. Yes, they were guarded, sure. And that's how we lived for until the Germans came close to Stalingrad.
Mm-hmm.
So then they took us back into the army. And when we went back into the army, I was part of a contingency, and we fought in Stalingrad, and we went south from there towards Romania.
Oh, did you fight to the end of the battle?
Oh, yes. We went through Romania.
The Stalingrad, the famous Stalingrad.
Yes, I was there, sure.
Who was your commander? Who was the Russian general?
I really don't
remember. Wasn't Rokossovsky?
No, I don't remember who it was. Because there were a few, you see, then they branched out. One went north, one went west, and one went south.
Uh-huh.
I really don't remember.
Did you attain any rank at all?
Yes, I was I had one bar, I don't know what you call it, first lieutenant or something like that.
And you got the promotion in the field, is that it?
Yes, that's right. I went to, then we went to Hungary, through Romania, we went through Ploiești, I remember, that those were refineries,
oil fields
in Ploiești, and we went through Craiova, all these cities that I remember.
Well, excuse me, as an officer, you have command of some men?
Yes, I had 36 men.
Mm-hmm.
I had 36
men. Was it the infantry, is that
infantry.
What you were in?
Yes.
And you traveled on trucks, I mean.
On trucks?
Military.
Mostly walked. There's no such thing as traveling.
Yeah.
Well, trucks were used for different purposes. We couldn't afford it.
Did you ever come face to face with German prisoners?
No, we weren't.
Were there any indoctrination in the Russian army and in socialism and communism? Political indoctrination?
Oh yes, you had in the Russian army. You had political people, especially assigned for indoctrination. Oh sure, oh, yeah. They are very famous for that.
Well, in the army, did you ever come across cities or towns where Jews had been massacred? Did you know about all that?
Because we didn't stay. We didn't stay long enough. Mm-hmm. We went through the front and right through it. You see, we didn't stop. So you know, like let's say you took a city like Bucharest, and you go into it and you stay there. You know, we didn't do that. There were others that did that, but we went right through. We continued going.
What other famous battles were you in?
We were in Budapest. We were in Budapest.
You live
outside Budapest. We were, and we didn't go into Budapest itself. Others did go in, but it was a city in that was the last battle I was in. Is in Székesfehérvár, they call it. I remember that. I'll never forget it. Székesfehérvár. And they hit me with a bullet in my knee.
You got wounded?
Yeah, and I got wounded. That was the end of me. That was the beginning of, that was, I would say, in 44. Yeah, it was in 44.
You ended in a hospital?
That was in a hospital. They put a cast on, and I was in a cast, and I recovered after a while, and they assigned me to a local, in Hungary. They assigned me to a local town there, and I stayed there until 45, when the end of the war.
Did you meet any Jews in Hungary?
Yes, I met some Jews in Szeged, in the town. It was a nice town, absolutely beautiful town. I met some Jews, in fact, he was a lawyer, I remember. Nice people, and they survived.
And they escaped somehow?
Yeah, they survived.
Did anybody hide them?
Yes, they were hidden by
local people.
So I met those people, and then there were quite a few Jews that I saw that survived, very, very religious people in Hungary. Mm-hmm. The Hungarian people are quite religious. So I met some of those, and from there...
Was there any talk of anti-Semitism in the Russian army?
Oh yes, absolutely. But it was squelched, it wasn't...
Just barrack talk.
Yeah, right. It wasn't open because presumably they have a law where anti-Semitism is not, is punishable, you see. But I don't think that they used that law at all, actually, at the time. But they were laughing of us Jews, you know, the Russian soldiers, sure, that we are hiding in inland, all the Jews are there. In fact, was what was the city there where most of the Vyazhenskis, refugees, used to go and used to stay there. So they used to laugh, from us that all the Jews are behind the front, but not this front, but the other front.
Are there any other Jews with you in the army, in your battalion or your group?
Yeah, there were a few.
Did you know them? Did you associate?
No, not too much. No. Not too much. Listen, the Russian Jews are brought up Russian. They were not, brought up Jews. They don't have a Jewish heritage. They didn't know very much about Judaism and about being Jewish. To them, it was Russia, and that's it.
Well, when these soldiers were mocking the Jews. They didn't mean the Russian Jews, did they?
Oh, yeah.
They
meant the Jews, Russian Jews. Oh, yeah. They meant the Jews in general. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There was no difference. It's just like, you know, it reminds me with Hitler.
Yeah.
You know, whether you were a Lutheran, you became a Lutheran, or whatever, it didn't make a darn bit of difference.
Yeah.
You were treated just like any other Jew who was a Jew.
Yeah.
And so it didn't make any difference.
So you were in the Russian army about 4 or 5 years?
I was in the, well, in the, between the labor camp.
Yeah.
And so, but yes, about 4 or 5 years.
All right, so the end of the war.
Yeah.
So what happened then?
The end of the war, I was, I knew...
At that time you were 22,
yes,
21, 22.
I was then quite well acquainted with the high-ranking officer that I was in the same battalion.
Mm-hmm.
He was discharged. He was, in fact, we were kind of very friendly.
He was liked
me very much. He was not Jewish, no. And he told me that he's going to discharge me at the same time. And he's going to take me back to his home, and from there I can go back wherever I want. So he helped to discharge me.
Mm-hmm.
And we sure did go back to Moscow.
Together?
Yes.
And by train?
By train, yes. And from there I stayed with him for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, as I say, he was very nice to me. And from there...
Remember his name?
No,
no,
not at all, not at all, no. Mm. Those are things that, you know, you don't, it's a passing situation. It's a passing situation, not something that you, you know, you would want to remember or something like that. From there, I went to, I tried to go back to Poland.
Yeah.
I had no problems going back to Poland. I came to Lodz to find out what had happened to my family, first of all. And we had a committee, a Jewish organization committee, where they worked on the names, if there's anybody living.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever is living or came back, they registered there.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I couldn't find anybody. And I went back to see where we lived, and there was nothing.
Destroyed?
Yeah, there was nothing. It was the ghetto was there, and there was nothing.
It was part of the ghetto?
Yeah.
And did you talk with any survivors that remembered things?
No, there was nothing. My father, we lived for a short while where my brother lived in that small town I told you about, my oldest brother. And at the time he died, my father died, and he was buried in this town. And I thought, I'll go back there. I wanted to, whatever, wherever I'm going to go, I figured I'd like to at least go back there and visit my father's grave. The cemetery, the Jewish cemetery, recall, used to be outside the town. It was on the way from the railroad station into town. And I remember I went to this town, I took the train, and I got off the railroad station and I walked. And I, you know, I was, my thoughts were somewhere else, I presume. Because before I knew, I was in town.
Mm-hmm.
I was approaching town, and I said to myself, my gosh, I didn't see a cemetery.
He said, oh, I must have missed it. So I said, well, I'm going to go back. So I went back. And I couldn't find a cemetery. So I went back to the town. By the way, I was in my uniform, Russian uniform, because that's all I had. So I went back to the town and I asked questions. Of course, first of all, I think it was silly of me to come in a Russian uniform because the Poles weren't too happy with the Russians to see a Russian uniform. But anyway, they told me that the cemetery doesn't exist, that they use the stones and everything else for different purposes, and it's just a field there. That's it. And that was it. I went back to lodge again. And I found a cousin. Yes. I found a cousin, and I went to his house and I stayed with him. I saw that there was no future, there is nothing for me to hang around here. I decided to continue to go west.
By that time you changed your clothes, you went sort of clothes, did you?
No. I was still in my Russian uniform. I went, I decided to
did
go to
did your cousin
Berlin.
Tell you anything? Or did he know anything?
Yes, he told me that no one, as far as he knows, no one survived.
Survived.
Yes.
Did he know anything about the life in the ghetto? What did he do? He ran away too?
No, he was in the ghetto, all right.
He was?
Yes, he told me a few things, a lot of things, Joey. And he told me about my mother, he told me about my brothers, my sisters, and...
How long did the ghetto exist there?
The ghetto existed until... 1944. And
eventually they shipped everybody off
to
the camps.
Sure.
Did any of his family survive?
One brother survived. One brother survived. Then I found an aunt of mine survived, and two of her daughters survived.
You found them in a lodge?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And we all lived at my cousin's house, my cousin's apartment. Then I decided that I have nothing to do there.
Did many Jews come back to lodge?
A lot of Jews came back to Jews.
Where'd they come from? From Russia?
They came from Russia, and they came from all different places, because if the first thing you did is go back where you come from, to see if someone has survived. That's the only way you could learn, if someone has survived. And so you had quite a few Jews coming to lodge, you see.
Well, the city actually was not destroyed militarily, was it?
No, the city was intact, actually.
The Poles surrendered it.
Yes, right. The part where the ghetto was.
Yeah, the ghetto.
That's where mostly went to, was destroyed. So I decided to leave. And I went west towards Berlin. When I got to Berlin,
I got arrested. I got, well, stopped and arrested by the Russians.
You're still in uniform, were you?
Still in uniform.
Oh, yeah.
Still in uniform. And I showed him all my papers, discharge and everything, and it didn't do any good. I was detained in Berlin. That was in East Berlin. And I was in jail. I was just waiting. See, I don't know whether they were checking up on me or whatever. It was a mystery to me, and there's nothing they could do about it.
Yeah.
One day they took me out and they told me they probably must have gotten the information from wherever. I gotta go back to a little bit. When I was discharged, my headquarters was in outside, the army headquarters was outside Vienna in Austria. So I had to go back to the headquarters and get my discharge papers. So of course there I received all my medals, medals for behavior, medals for
bravery.
So I had quite a few medals. Well, anyway, going now, let's go. I just missed that and I thought I'd push it in because I don't know whether it has some relevancy or not at a later date. I was asked into an official at the time in Berlin, and he told me one thing. He said, look, he said, we checked up on you and everything else, and it looks like you're all right, and we would like to that you should be, you know, freed again, but we need you, and as long as you've been a good soldier and so forth, we would like you to work for us. I said, okay. He said, I want you to travel. You will have an assignment. And I want you to travel to West Berlin. And they have a camp for Jews who are, these are people who come from different parts of the Poland and other Eastern countries, and that camp is like a way station that these Jews are being shipped somewhere else, and I want you to just, you know, use your the intelligence, you'll be in the intelligence. And I, of course, you'd have to come in every single day and make reports. I said, okay. So I came back one day, I make my report, I made, of course, a false report, nothing, you know, nothing that would hurt anybody there. But after a couple of times, I was trying to get in touch with the head person in the camp to tell him what I know, but he didn't want to listen to me because he thought that I am a
spy. A double spy,
you see.
Was he Jewish, the head of the
camp? Oh, sure. Yeah. What, was a Jewish camp?
Leadership, yeah, okay.
So consequently, it took me a little while and to convince him that I am a Jew and I, where I come from and so forth and so on. And of course, he believed me, and I gave him all my medals, and I gave him all my clothes, and gave me different clothes, and they shipped me out.
Yes, they did. I never went back.
Never went back.
Yeah.
They shipped me out to Munich. Okay, outside Munich. That was another camp, because as you know,
didn't these stupid Russians know that you were going to come back?
That's how it is. That's how it is. That's how it is.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they looked for the first few days, whether they kept an eye on me or not. I don't know. But that's what it is.
Maybe that's the way they want to get rid of you.
Right. Yeah. Possibly. Who knows? Well, anyway, in fact, in Munich, I saw this man who was the head of the camp in Western Berlin, and I recognized him. And I told him who I was, and he remembered me.
Yeah.
So anyway, from there we stayed in Munich. I met my wife there.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we're gonna get to that.
Time.
Yeah.
I met my wife, and my wife, of course, was very lucky. She had parents,
mm-hmm.
And of course, I didn't have anybody. And we were married.
Oh,
in July.
That's interesting.
In 1946.
Mm-hmm. You met her when in 46.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I met her, it must have been later, because...
Under what circumstances did you meet her? How did it...
Circumstances, well... I was in a camp. Well, I don't know whether you call it a camp. No, it wasn't a camp. We were in Beitar again, you see. I wound up again in a Rebbe Zionist organization.
It was in my blood,
you see.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wound up there.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife lived privately with her parents. They were supported in a small town. They were supported by the UNRWA, United Nations Relief Organization. Mm-hmm. And by the Jewish philanthropies, they call it at the time, they called it different, the Joint Distribution Committee.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So we all were supported by these people. And we had a little shul there in that little town. And I was conducting the services, and my father-in-law, Oliver Sholem, so my wife told me afterwards, came home one day, one Friday night, and he was amazed. See, they come from Vilna. They were not as pious.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. They, that's right, they were not as pious as we are,
yeah.
You see. Yeah. Their Jewishness was, you see, I'm not going to go into that, because those people there around Vilna, they gave their children education in Hebrew, in a spoken Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
We were more Orthodox Jews who believed in tradition and davening, and so forth. Cheder, prayer, and so forth. So he came home and he says to the family, he says, "My God," he said, I was amazed tonight. He said, "This young fellow was so brave," he said, "and he davened at the omelet. Something that, my father-in-law would never do, be that brave, although he knew how to daven and everything else, but he wouldn't dare go to the omelet and
daven." Yeah. Uh-huh.
So then, of course, I got acquainted with his
daughter. He didn't say that was a good, make a nice
son-in-law. No, you see, in fact, when I got acquainted with my wife today, those days, and we were close to get married or whatever, my father-in-law wasn't too happy about it.
Yeah.
The reason for it is because, you see, those days, in the olden days, before you were married, you had to know who the family is, who the father is, who the mother is. Is it a fine family, you know what I mean? Is in the background of the young man, is he educated, is he Jewish enough, or is he, and here he didn't know. Maybe I had left a wife somewhere, you see, something to know.
Yeah.
So that was something, we're finishing here. Yeah. So that's why we had to, he was a little against marrying my wife, you see. So,
little family skeletons here.
That's right, because he didn't know who I was, you see. But we got married just the same.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a nice wedding. There was another couple in that kibbutz where I was, and we were married together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was the situation.
What year was that?
That was in 1946.
1946.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We lived there in kibbutz. Of course, Israel wasn't in existence as yet. But we had people coming from Palestine.
Why do you use the word kibbutz?
Because it was a kibbutz. That organization that I lived in, the Betar, was a kibbutz, actually.
But it was just in Germany.
It was in Germany.
Outside of Munich.
Yes, but it was a kibbutz. Because we worked there, we trained to go someplace, to go someday to Israel.
I see.
Okay. Of course, we would have gone to Israel at the time, but my wife couldn't leave her parents. Mm-hmm. And Israel wasn't a state yet. It was Palestine still.
Yeah.
And the English were still there. And in order to go to Palestine, you have to go through Italy, through the mountains, the Alps.
Yeah.
And her parents were not in a situation where they would be able to do that. So we had to stick with them. And that was the time when the American government let the refugees in, and we came to this country.
Under that program?
Under that program.
I see. So
we were the first ones from the family to come.
Where did you come to, New York?
She had a sister,
yeah,
who was married. Mm-hmm. In Germany also, and she had the parents. And we were the first one to come to New York. When we came to New York, I didn't have anybody, as you can see. I didn't have anybody left there, and I don't have anybody here. But my wife did.
Yeah.
She had an aunt in New York. And they're working people. They couldn't do much really for us. But my wife had a big family in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Actually, it was my father-in-law had a big family in Boston. My father-in-law had a brother in Boston.
What was her maiden name?
Meltzer.
Meltzer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And in fact, it was a quite a famous name in Boston. Yes, he was a big doctor who was in Boston. His name was Meltzer. And they were cousins. So there was, I don't think whether I should go into this part, because I'm sure that my wife will get into that. So, and we were not very welcome as refugees. They didn't know what to do with us. They were afraid that we were going to come and occupy their homes, and that we would become a burden. And so we had to be on our own, you see. So I got a job, luckily. Of course, we came through the Hayas, by the way. It was a joint program between the Hayas and the Joint Distribution Committee. And we came to Boston. And the reason we came to Boston, as I said, because my father, I remember, wrote us, we asked him in a letter of what we should do, because we could have gone any place. We could have gone to Florida, California, or any city in the United States. And we knew nothing about any city of the United States anyway. It was a strange land, a strange language, and to us, it didn't, one city or the other didn't mean anything. So, but my father-in-law wrote us to come to Boston because he, having family here, thought that being closer to family, that sure, we'll get some kind of a help, whether it's monetary help or help any other way, of to be able to get settled. So this is a... this is the reason why we came to Boston. I got a job, my wife got a job first. For her it was easier to get a job, I suppose. She worked in Nealon Street, doing some embroidering, I remember. And if I'm not mistaken, she earned something like 25 hours a week. And that was marvelous, that was good. Then I got a job, and I worked in Boston in a factory, and I was a cutter.
Clothing cutter?
No, for automobile seat covers.
Oh, seat covers.
Yes.
That's interesting.